Good day, everyone, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've decided to join us today. We've been having a pretty important conversation here in the city of Detroit for about a year now. That's how long it's been since the Reparations Task Force in the city of Detroit was convened. Now, the goal of this group is to research the harm that was done to Black Detroiters over many decades of legalized discrimination, and even after discrimination was made illegal in our country, and to come up with policy suggestions to hopefully usher in a world where Black Detroiters receive reparations for past harms that have been done to us, but also where we level set a little bit, make sure that there isn't discrimination still existing that goes forward into the future. But of course, not everything is easy to actually do. And so the task force has started out with a little bit of a bumpy road. Over the past year, there have been three task force vacancies, including one death, and general concerns that members haven't all been taking the job seriously enough. In addition to those organizational challenges, part of the struggle is, of course, the job itself and the weight all of this carries. The idea of reparations for African Americans is really old in this country. It began after the Civil War in an attempt to create a more perfect and more equal union. But it isn't just about slavery. Relevant here in Detroit are things like displacement, job and housing discrimination and segregation, things that have gone on for a really, really long time. It is about examining the long arc of discrimination in our community and figuring out how to repay those who were harmed, but also, again, to make sure that we're not still doing it and creating or maintaining the gaps that exist because of discrimination now. Now, some small liberal towns have already made their way through this process and implemented reparations in the form of things like housing investments and other things. And many large cities are also exploring what reparations look like right now. So the question is, what might happen here in Detroit? When we voted for this back in 2021, I felt this incredible sense of optimism and hope. Wow, we're going to sit and actually talk about these incredible inequalities that exist in our city and in our region, figure out what the source is, the specific source of those inequalities, and try to make up for them. Try to make people whole who were who lost things because of discrimination or were discriminated against in a way that deprived them of opportunities. That we were going to sit and really think about what the future could look like in our community if we would just face up to the awful things that have happened in our past. That's where we want to begin the conversation, is with that optimism. We do still have this reparations task force. They are still working on this problem. The question is, how do they harness this energy that existed, that voted for this in the first place, in order to make sure that this has the effect that it promised to have? A little later in the hour, we're going to talk with the task force's chair, Keith Williams. We're also going to talk with an organization that's tasked with assisting the task force in its job, looking at the ways in which discrimination define our community. But before we get there, we want to talk with Malachi Barrett. He is a reporter for Bridge Detroit. He covers the city of Detroit, and he's been writing about the task force almost since it began. Malachi, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Good morning, Stephen. Thanks for having me.
So let's go back to begin the conversation. For those who don't know, how did we get here? How did Detroit's Reparations Task Force come to be in the first place? And what is it specifically asked to do?
Well, it really started with a ballot initiative. Keith Williams, who's now leading the task force, was behind this effort to put something to voters that would basically ask if there should be a group put together to study policy recommendations to, you know, address the historic injustices that we felt at the federal and the local level. And 80% of voters supported that in 2021. Coming up 3 years later, there was a process to fill that task force that took much of 2022. They asked residents, you know, what shape should this take? What kind of experts and expertise should be on it? And then it came together around February of last year and started meeting. At first there was some monthly meetings and then kind of a sporadic schedule. They switched to a quarterly meeting schedule and there were some interruptions there. And at this point, you know, kind of a year after the task force has been assembled, there's not a whole lot of documentation to kind of show what that process has resulted. The specific task before them is to create recommendations for community reparations, for mass historic unjust treatment of the majority black population. And, you know, that could look like housing and economic development programs. But it's not exactly clear the scope of all of this. Task force members have said, let's really focus on what the city of Detroit has done, as opposed to the impact of slavery and things that go back all the way back to like 1619. Mm-hmm. That's more of a job for the federal government. The problem really that I think we've heard from residents is that this task force was set up to be kind of facilitators of a really broad and intense community conversation. And that conversation hasn't really been able to happen because of some stops and starts, because of these vacancies, because of some confusion about what the responsibilities and the support from city council has been. This is also set up as a city council task force, but is also kind of kept separate from the city council in some ways that were kind of meant to depoliticize the process. One kind of key difference here is normally task forces operated by the city council have members sitting on it, not in this case. The task force was really rocked by the death of Mother Joanne Watson last July. She was, you know, a generational leader for this fight. She had been in Congress advocating for federal reparations policies and was a really key leader in Detroit. And after her death, the task force was kind of reeling for a few months. They stopped doing public meetings. And then two members, including one of the co-chairs, resigned in December of last year. For a number of reasons, there were some kind of frustrations with the support they felt they were getting from the city, or lack thereof, really. Some kind of internal disputes about how the task force should be going about this work. And now as we enter 2024 and the task force has to, they have a deadline in October to release these policy recommendations. Leaders of the task force say that they're kind of getting back on the right track. They've hired a program manager to help them do some of the administrative functions. One of the big problems that has kept this task force from being able to facilitate this community conversation is, you know, the meetings have not been very accessible. Mm-hmm. There have been a lot of like technical problems with Zoom broadcasts and noticing meetings and giving people ample time to, notice to come to these meetings, as well as like agendas and things like that. So it's not really clear from the public's angle. Like if you go online and try to find information about when can I participate in the next meeting, what's been done so far, there's not a lot of information out there about that right now.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the things that are happening now to try to put all of this on at least a more certain track, I guess is probably the right description. City Council President Mary Sheffield has taken a bigger role in the task force more recently. And as you point out, this is not part of City Council, but it's kind of affiliated with City Council, kind of set off to the side. But let's talk about her role, what role she wants to play, and what she is doing to try to get things back on track.
So the council president introduced the resolution that formed this task force after voters established it. So in a lot of ways, her office has led a lot of the public engagement and noticing of meetings. But she has also wanted to let the task force be independent and free to do this work in the way that they see fit and not, you know, get too involved in that. That has changed after really a direct call from residents. There's a group called the Detroit Grassroots Coalition that small group, I mean, probably a dozen or so folks had a virtual meeting with the council president in her office about a month ago, early January. Kind of a tense meeting, honestly, coming to her directly, voicing frustrations about the lack of process, pushing her to get more involved. And after that, she committed to take a more active role in supporting the task force. And really, that means meeting more regularly with this new project manager who used to work for city council as a staff member to arrange these meetings, support requests for procurements and spending of $350,000 in budget funding that the council had set aside for this task force, review some of the bylaws, get information posted online, really do a lot more of the kind of transparency and accessibility issues that have been holding back public participation. You know, the task force began a partnership with the University of Michigan last September to begin documenting some of these discriminatory policies, kind of set a foundation for discussions on reparations programs. And that report should be available between March and April of this year. The task force is also working with Columbia University. There's this national group called the African American Redress Network that's going to be coming here March 10 to collect some stories of residents about, you know, what is the kind of current impact. Mm-hmm. So they're going about this two ways. U of M is going to look at the historic problems. This surveying of residents with researchers from Columbia and Howard will interview residents about how is that being felt today. And that will set the kind of basis of facts that the task force will use to create its first group of recommendations by the fall. And they've said, too, if they need more time, there's a potential to add additional time. I think, you know, we all expected this to be very complicated and difficult work that would take some time. So there's not there is an element of time pressure here. I mean, people will definitely want to see some results of this thing that really got started a couple of years ago. But also there's an opportunity to kind of slow down if needed.
Yeah. We should point out that the African American Redress Network is going to join the show a little later in the hour to talk about their work here in Detroit and in some other places. So you'll hear more about that from then. Also, would love to get going with listeners on the phones and on social. Want to join this conversation about Detroit's reparations task force. Have you paid much attention to what they have been doing over the last year? Talk about your expectations. What do you imagine is possible from all of this work, taking a look at our history of discrimination here in Detroit and Metro Detroit, and trying to figure out how to make good on the things that went so wrong and make sure, of course, in the future that we don't have the same kind of gaps that exist today. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can make you part of the program that way. So Malachi, one of the things I think is really important about this for Detroiters, and the thing that I heard from Detroiters both when they voted for this in 21 and as the task force got started, is something you just alluded to, that this is supposed to be a conversation about our past, about our history. And Detroiters were eager to take part in that conversation. I think if there is frustration, it's not in the idea that we don't have a set of recommendations yet. I'm not sure most people expected it to work quite that quickly. But I do think that they're frustrated that there doesn't seem to be more participation, more opportunity even for participation in this discussion. Have you heard from task force organizers about how they might address that feeling?
They definitely know they need to do better in that regard. I mean, there's task force members have been very clear that they have not really held up to the kind of accessibility and transparency expectations that they had set. I mean, they pledged to follow the Open Meetings Act, even though they're not required to by law, to you know, have all of these public comment sections at the beginning of meetings to notice them on time. That hasn't really happened. I think there's been kind of confusion about how to participate. You know, there was a series of stops and starts last year with meetings. They postponed the second meeting and then took a 2-month break after Joanne Watson's death. They kind of switched to like a quarterly meeting schedule, but that only lasted for one meeting, and now they're back on monthly meetings at the beginning of this year. The idea moving forward is to meet the first Saturday of every month at a different location throughout the city. One of the challenges with that has been actually identifying sites where they can hold meetings that are large enough and have the kind of technical ability to host Zoom broadcasts. And does the task force itself have the expertise? Does it have back-end staff to host those meetings? I mean, you need a lot of equipment. You need a strong internet connection. You need to make sure that people have the correct link to get on. There were a couple of cases last year where links went out and then you needed a password to join the meeting, and the people were tweeting out. The council president's office was actually tweeting out the password so that people could join. And, you know, if you're not fortunate enough to see that or know where to look for that, you're not able to participate in that way. That was really the key reason a program manager has been such a, you know, important part of this, to kind of handle those back end tasks, because the task force members are really researchers, academics, community voices. They're not people that are really used to the kind of just like the organization of putting together these meetings and making sure that they're accessible to folks. The Northwest Activities Center is hosting the next meeting on February 3rd. That was where they met in January. I think, you know, the intent of moving throughout the city is definitely so that folks have the chance to kind of not have to drive across Detroit to find them. But, you know, there's not even really a good outline of when those meetings will happen now. The meeting for, I guess that would be next Saturday, hasn't even been noticed yet. There's an email account that's been established to collect feedback, but there's no website really that has meeting notices and documents. So, I mean, in terms of facilitating this conversation, it's like, where do people actually go to do that? Sure. It's been tough for folks to find that out.
Yeah. Okay. Malachi Barrett from Bridge Detroit. Always great to have you here on Detroit Today. Thanks for coming by to talk about the Reparations Task Force.
Absolutely. Anytime.
We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
We've been talking about Detroit's Reparations Task Force and the work that it's done over the past year, as well as what we might expect from the year coming up. One of the things that's absolutely and unequivocally true about the task force here in Detroit is that it includes a lot of people who I think an awful lot of in this community. They're smart. They're thoughtful. They're dedicated to the idea of this city and its future, and of course, the people of this city and their future. We could not really have done better in terms of who's on it. So one of the questions is, why have we had so much trouble getting all of this on track, getting it moving at the pace and in the manner that we all thought it would? To answer that question and talk more about the work of the task force, we're now joined by Keith Williams. He is the Michigan Democratic Black Caucus chair, but he is also the chair of Detroit's Reparations Task Force. Keith, always great to see you.
Good morning.
Welcome back to the
studio. Good morning.
Yeah. So we've been talking about the task force and all of the things that it's done. I want to start with your perspective. Talk about the last year, the things you guys have been working on, and the frustrations that people have with the process so far. Why have things not gone quite the way we anticipated?
I'm going to start off with a scripture that says, weeping may endure for a night, but joyeth cometh in the morning, okay? and basically what it's all about, it's like sausage making, Stephen. You know, it's ugly, you're trying to put it together, and then when you put it in the frying pan and the results is good, is delicious, and you're getting it's edible, okay? And so, you know, it's just like any organization, new organization, you got all these minds and all these thoughts about what reparation is, but you know, you got to bring all that together. And I'm telling people this, It's been three decades since John Conyers presented H.R. 40. Okay, and this was started by Reparation Ray, the articulate brother, real estate guy, son still living in Metro Detroit. And he started this movement, and then John Conyers, they both collaborated. And then they had Joanne Watson that worked with John Conyers, and they was trying to bring it to fruition. But as you know, in the federal government still languishing, is nothing going to happen because of you got Southern Democrats. Everybody's scared of the word reparations. So I said, why don't they come up with repair, heal, and rebuild, okay, if it's going to get that detrimental to the cause. But at the end of the day, we're trying to make it work. And I'm just telling people, have patience, okay? Reparations, they've been talking that for years, and Stephen, and and we come up, one's bad sister out of Evanston, Illinois, my friend, who I'm trying to emulate is Robin Ruth Simmons. She's the one who came up with the municipality reparation, making it local to the to those governments who has caused all the harm within the African-American race. We all know freeway systems went to Tulsa, they went to Chicago, and they went to Detroit. So just have patience. We're going to get it right. You know, and my question is, where was these other folks out there when the issue about reparation was out there? All of a sudden now, the reparation task force come to fruition, and everybody got that, they want to take shots and all this other stuff. But where were they then?
Yeah. So let's talk about what's happened over the last year then. Yeah. Are you where you expected to be at this point?
You know, after we won by 80% of the vote, it took a year for the city council. They had to go through their process. And then last year, we finally got, we got together. And then we had several meetings, several trying to get to know you meetings and all this other stuff. But what changed is when Robert Ruth Simmons came and spent the whole day, a weekend, and it was back in April or May, and she's got us on the right track. And so now we're trying to get on the right track. As Malachi, he did an eloquent job, and I like Malachi. He's not one of those sneaky reporters that
the guy, sneaky reporters. Yeah, what are you talking about?
The gotcha guys. But he laid it out. And what happened is Robin Ruth Simmons got us focused on where we should go, and we try to emulate what they did in Evanston. Yeah. Although Evanston is 50% African American. A college
very
town.
Different community. Yeah.
They're a very different community. More a lot. I like going there every year. For the last 3 years, they have the conventions. Yeah. I've been going all the million-dollar homes and all that richness out there. I want some of that coming to
the
hood.
We need some of that here in Detroit.
Yeah,
too,
we need right? some of that in the hood, man. Yeah. But she's got us on track, and we're focused in two areas right now. University of Michigan is doing a harm report. You got to know the harm before you can go anywhere. And then Columbia and Redress Network is coming to town in March to go do an impact report. One is the cause and one is the effect. And we're now, since we got our program manager, we started specifically about rules and all that other stuff, rules of engagement. And I think we are on the track, on the right track of getting this done. We should have a report. I'm hopeful we'll have a report by September. So put it in the hands of the city council and let them do what they got to do to take it to the next step.
Yeah. We should explain for listeners that Robin Ruth Simmons is the founder and executive director of First Repair, yes, which is a nonprofit that informs local communities about how they can go about reparations. As you point out, they've done work in Evanston.
Man,
we're helping you here, too.
Every month we've been meeting for the last 3 years. We got 60 cities involved in municipality reparations around the country.
So I want to talk about the vacancies that have come up in the last in the last year. One, of course, was the death of Joanne Watson, the really unfortunate and tragic death for this community of Joanne Watson. But you had two other folks go away as well. You know, for some people, that suggests instability or turmoil. I want to hear from your perspective, what happened?
I love both of them, and Lauren is my friend.
Lauren Weeks Hood, who was your co-chair.
Yeah, my co-chair. We still stay in touch. Weeks, you know, when he left me a kind message. But the bottom line is people got to do what they got to do, Steve, and I can't speak for them. All I can do is speak for my intentions and what I'm trying to get across. But I will speak no ill of them because they're great people. Just people, you know, they go in directions they think is best for them, and that's all I can say. I miss Lauren, you know, I miss both of them, but the reparation movement is bigger than those folks, it's bigger than me, it's bigger than John Conyers. It's about redressing issues that, you know, that harm black folks from gaining wealth in America.
And does that disruption account for some of the trouble that you guys have had? It's not easy to keep things on track when you don't have the same people the whole time.
But if you got a format, you just got to stick to the format. Like you got a format, WDs. You can, if you got a good strong, you got a format. People can come and go, but if it's got a plan and we execute the plan, I don't think it's going to be bad, man. I think it's, you know, like I said, sausage making, when my mother used to cook them sweet potato pies, man. And then when she put it in that oven and come on, you slice, take a slice, it is good. And that's what we're trying to do. Stephen, I'm not trying to talk about negative stuff. I'm talking about the positive stuff that the citizens put us in place to do something for them. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm a public service. I'm not trying to get rich off of this. I'm trying to do what's right. I was born in 1956 in Women's Hospital in the heart of Black Bottom. Mm-hmm. We lived at 3154 East 4th Street, right on King's football field. my sister and my brothers went to Duffield, where Macomb is the first owner of slaves. So I get it. You know, and some of these new folk, they got to get it. And one thing is what we got to do, Stephen, we got to do a history tour. People need to know the history. Sure. When black folks came here, and even in slavery in 1790 with the French and all of, we had some rambunctious slaves. They was fighting back. They didn't want to be in slavery. And then, you know, and then you got Dr. Ozzie and Sweet, you know, man's castle is his home. He, you know, person got shot with that. I didn't realize from 1925 to 1929, they built 50,000 homes. And black folks could not live in them, mm-hmm. when they came from the South. So people need to know the history, and the history is real. And what we're trying to do is recreate the history, but bring some substantive stuff to so people can understand what happened and how we can redress it.
Yeah, yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag Detroit Today, and be part of the conversation that way. Keith, I want to talk about Mary Sheffield, who's the president of the city council, who sponsored the resolution to create the task force. She also says she wants to be more involved and help the task force get its work done. Talk about that relationship and how important it is for her to be more involved.
You know, it's an old saying, the doors of the church is always open. Okay. And Mary, I saw Mary yesterday. I think we're getting ready to get three more appointments. She didn't get specific with me, Joanne's seat, Lauren's seat, and Week's seat. But I tell you this, we need the city council to be involved, because it's a team. It's a teamwork make the dream work, okay? If we all come together, it's a collaborative effort. We need everybody. You know, I'm just saying, the task force is the only entity that has standing in the city of Detroit when it comes down to this mission, because the citizens of the city of Detroit voted for it. And so Mary is trying to do her part. She's going to do her part, but we got to execute it. We got to do what is necessary. We got to make sure Michigan is doing what they're supposed to do. When folks come in from Washington, D.C., doing what they're supposed to do. And now we're now picking locations more or less into the rec centers and things like that, where, you know, where the folks always there. You know, you don't buy a rec center, you're going to get the elderly, you're going to get young and old, you're going to get the whole shot. So we're starting to, you know, find our places and spaces and things like that. And with the folks coming in March, we're going to go to, you know, places where the harm was caused, like Southwest Detroit, Kennedy Center. You know, pollution, people have died in that community. You had Ford Motor Company, you had Great Lakes Steel, and you had Marathon Oil. Then we're going to go to Black Bottom. Then we're going to go to the Burwood Wall. Those are all significant landmarks that was a part of the skullduggery and the harm that was caused on black people. So we're getting it together, Stephen. You're going to be proud. You're going to be proud in the next 6-7 months. And I'm going to say this to you. Mm-hmm. being on any board, you know you're going to have different opinions,
of course,
different attitudes, and you got to be strong. You got to be willing to listen, compromise, and all this other stuff. So I'm asking the citizens to compromise with us. You know, like I said, Rome wasn't built in a day, but we don't need you taking shots at us and, you know, all that other stuff, because this is valuable work. It's work from the heart work.
Yeah.
We're not getting paid for it.
Yeah, this is one of the most important things we will do ever in this community. And, and I'm not exaggerating in any way there. I mean, I really believe that the effort to face up to all of the things that have happened here, to really unearth those things and talk about them, and then confront them in a way that says, look, people were wronged and they deserve compensation for that, but also we need to make sure that going forward, we're not repeating the errors, right? Yes. We're not making the same mistakes again so that 50 years from now, a task force sits around and says, well, how do we fix all of these things that went wrong? I mean, there isn't a more fundamental question to face or answer in this community.
This can be transformative if we do it right. You know, there's a lot of land out here. There's many forms of reparation. We got to look at all that, how you pay for it, Steve, how, you know, what encompass, you know, reparations and things like that. And so, you know, this can be a game-changing moment for African Americans when it comes down to economic development and housing. Not this little stucco houses. You know, everybody talking about affordable housing. I want real housing. The house, my first house was what I bought was on Pearson in Plymouth, a brick home. In a solid neighborhood. I want to see that again.
Yeah.
I want to see the kids walking down the street. Maybe I'm in a fairy tale world, but I want to see the schools working again. Just a whole collaborative infrastructure kind of thing where people can come back. They will want to come back and live instead of going to somewhere else and live, because there's no place like home. And I ain't going nowhere, Steve. I went to Eastern Michigan. I came back, and I've been here. Me and my wife, we live in her mother's house. And so we're not going anywhere. I'm going to die in Detroit because I love Detroit. Yeah. And this reparation thing can be a game-changing moment if we do it right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Keith Williams, it is always great to talk with you. And, of course, I wish you all the luck this year keeping on the work on the Reparations Task Force. September, you think, might be when we get our first report.
Yes.
We will look forward to that. Yes. Thank you so much.
And I want to thank Malachi, and I want to thank you for offering us and letting us speak our piece.
Of course, of course. Yes. Okay, when we come back, we are going to continue this conversation about Detroit's Reparations Task Force. Stay where you are. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. There have been a lot of new movements for racial redress in this country. In 2019, for instance, Evanston, Illinois passed the first reparations law in American history, and it set out to address decades of housing segregation and discrimination. There are also reparations task forces now established across the country in some cities. One group that is working to help those task forces is the African American Redress Network, which is now partnering with the Detroit Reparations Task Force to talk about what they do, how they're working to assist the task force here, and what this looks like on a more national level. We've got the co-founders with us. Linda Mann is a co-founder of the Redress Network, which is this collaboration between Columbia University and Howard University. She's also an adjunct associate professor and adjunct research scholar in the Faculty of International and Public Affairs at Columbia. Linda Mann, welcome to Detroit Today.
Good morning, everyone.
Also with us is Justin Hansford. He is a co-founder of the African American Redress Network as well, and an associate professor of law at Howard University and executive director of the Thurgood Marshall Civil Rights Center. Professor Hansford, welcome to Detroit Today.
Good morning.
So I want to start here. What does the African American Redress Network do? Justin Hansford, I'll start with you.
Sure. Well, you know, the African American Redress Network is a collaboration between Howard and Columbia, and it really allows us to support the grassroots movements that are happening all around the country, designed to obtain reparative justice and redress for people who have been victimized by enslavement. Professor Mann will tell you there are over 450 of these grassroots movements happening all around the nation, and Detroit is part of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it involves legal support or scholarly historical research or organizing work to get the community out and organize to fight back, anything that we can do to be a support, we're going to do that.
Yeah. Professor Mann, I want to bring you into the conversation as well to talk about specifically what you are doing with the folks here in the city of Detroit. We've got this reparations task force that has been at work for a little more than a year, or almost a year at this point. What is the network's work with the task force look like?
Well, as Professor Hansford was stating, we've worked with many different communities on efforts to advance reparative justice. And in many spaces, that work is actually led by the communities alongside our students. In Detroit, we will be implementing an impact analysis using the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. There are 17 UN Sustainable Development Goals that assess the overall well-being and health of communities, and we will be targeting looking at the Black community in Detroit. The Black Audit Project, which is what this impact analysis is coined, was actually advanced by Professor Hansford at Howard University. And it's important to note that Professor Hansford is the United Nations, he's the U.S. delegate to the United Nations Permanent Forum for People of African Descent. Mm-hmm. And this study will be elevated at the UN in April in Geneva.
Mm-hmm. When we think about community-led efforts to do this, I want to have you guys talk some about how we know that that's authentic. One of the things that I think has frustrated people here in Detroit is that when we passed the ordinance that would create this task force back in 2021, I think people were really looking forward to the conversation as much as the outcome, right? The chance to be part of the exploration of this issue and of the past in order to determine what we should be doing now to make a better future. And I think if you asked most Detroiters who had that excitement when that happened, they would say, well, I haven't really felt that yet. I haven't really seen that yet. So I want to get an idea of what community-led efforts in this regard should look like, and maybe some places that you've seen it work in a different way than we have been able to manage so far here in our city. Professor Hansford, I'll start with you.
Yeah, well, one of the more successful experiences we've had in the Black Audit Project is when we went to San Francisco in 2023 in the spring, and we had a similar type of town hall where we talked about the sustainable development goals as they apply to Black San Francisco. So just to provide context, there are 17 of these. They allow us a platform to talk about everything from access to housing, which is a major issue in San Francisco, access to education, healthcare, clean water, all of the basic human rights that all people around the world are guaranteed, but too often Black people don't get to talk about their unique experiences trying to obtain these basic human rights in the United States. Mm-hmm. So, you know, here, you know, this is a platform for us to talk about how these issues are not just political issues, they're human rights issues, and they're issues that oftentimes aren't solely in the hands of the current mayor or city council. A lot of times there are long-term systemic reasons why we don't have, you know, equal access to education or healthcare. I lived in Detroit for a little while in 2010. I worked for Judge Damon Keith as a law clerk.
Mm-hmm.
So that definitely, you know, working with him, right. I learned a lot about this. Yeah. He knew the city inside and out.
Absolutely did.
That's right. And so I learned a lot about these issues, and these are systemic issues that are not issues that have just popped up starting today. These are issues that have been around a long time, and they're going to call for systemic solutions. And you hope that a project like reparations would point to those systemic issues and give people a voice to talk about what they've experienced in their families going back for generations, and how we can now move to solutions. So in San Francisco, we had people talk about their, you know, their grandparents' experience being Black in San Francisco in the 40s and 50s, mm-hmm. and how the city has changed. I mean, it was really a chance to be able to speak about their experiences and how we could perhaps now use this opportunity to really make a difference. I'm hoping something similar can happen for Detroit.
Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag Detroit Today, and be part of the program that way. Let's start today with Evan in Detroit. Evan, what's on your mind?
Hey, how's it going? I appreciate you taking the time.
Sure.
So I've been listening, and when I originally called, I think I was, you know, like most residents, I think very kind of just unsure and ignorant about what exactly the task force looked like and what it even means. You know, mm-hmm. is it going to be cash given to people? Like, how is it going to be implemented? Who is it going to be targeted? Where is the money going to come from? And I think, you know, most of us still have a lot of those questions. Like, so I think we really just need some structure and specifics because, mm-hmm. you know, we do like the idea of it. It sounds great. You know, it sounds like justice. It sounds like what we deserve. But where is the money going to come from? And our, you know, if it's coming from the city, is it just taxes that we pay?
Right. Are we going to pay for our own reparations? Right. Yeah. Right, Evan. Yeah.
The idea I had, maybe the reparations in some form could look like a tax subsidy, the same way they subsidize, you know, these hotel water square and these arenas, mm-hmm. and these project, you know, whenever the billionaires get, you know, hundreds of millions of taxpayer money to build something, maybe they could let us keep some of our own money if we qualify for reparations, and maybe mm-hmm. we could use that to buy some land, or they could, you know, make
Evan, I like the way you're thinking, and I think that's the whole point of this, is for all of us to kind of turn our brains to these questions for a bit and try to come up with solutions. And you're asking the right questions. How does this work? Where does the money come from? And all of those things are things that the task force will be addressing at some point. But Professor Hansford and Professor Mann, I wonder if you can talk just a little about how this has worked in other communities, the solution, the outcome, because that's one of the questions I think what Evan's talking about. I hear that a lot here in Detroit. Let's talk, for instance, about Evanston and this effort to repair housing discrimination. What's actually happening there, and how is it supported? I'll leave it to you guys to figure out who's going to answer that question first.
Maybe Professor Mann could start on this one.
Okay.
I actually wanted to talk about Chicago. But
okay. Well, whatever example you think is the best.
Well, just because, I mean, we can talk about Evanston. I just feel like it's one of the more well-known cases. And so I thought I would just raise up a study that we worked alongside community members in Chicago, in Inglewood and West Garfield, a year and a half ago, and engaged deeply with about 12 plus Black-led organizations that were already working on addressing some of these harms. So there were programs that were focused on food sustainability, on healthcare, on education access. And what we did with those, with that work is, as I said, worked deeply alongside community organizations that were already engaged in this work, and then took a really deep dive into the policies that were happening in Chicago to explore whether or not there were some avenues to this previous caller's question that would actually work to address the harms in those communities. And what we came upon was that there had been a policy put forth for guaranteed basic income. And it was basically a more broad distributed program. We recommended that they target these communities that we could demonstrate the government had disinvested and discriminated against over time. And I'm happy to say that in December, the new mayor, Brandon Johnson, actually implemented that policy almost to a T to what we recommended, with the advice and guidance from the Black community in those communities. So that's a different example, but I just wanted to raise that up because Evanston is raised up a lot, but there are other areas of promise that I think we need to also look at and see that there are policies that are possible, and it's looking for those avenues that exist already potentially within the government system.
No, I think that's a really great example. Professor Hansford, I want to give you a chance as well, but we've only got about a minute and a half left, so it's got to be a quick one.
Sure. Well, going back to that Evanston example, which is so famous, there was a study conducted by the city of Evanston, which demonstrated that it had participated in redlining from 1919 to 1969. And so Evanston initially created a plan to provide redress in the form of support for housing subsidies, down payments, home improvements. So there was a remedy, reparation that was systemic and that spoke specifically to the harm that the city demonstrated. And so that's some of the things that we could look forward to perhaps in Detroit. If we know what's happened in, you know, some of the histories of redlining in Detroit and some of the things that happened during segregation, in addition to enslavement, so many times people look at reparations as solely a redress for enslavement policy. But there's so many things that we can provide repair for. And the list is long, and this process can allow us to start doing that listing so that we can begin getting justice.
Okay. Unfortunately, we are out of time. I would love to, of course, continue this conversation, and we've got other callers who want to participate as well. But I want to thank Professor Mann and Professor Hansford, not only for joining us here on Detroit Today, but for the work that they're doing with Detroit's Reparations Task Force. Thanks to both of you for joining us today, and we'll try to have you back in the future.
Thank you so much for having us. We appreciate you raising up this work.
Sure. Today's episode of Detroit Today was produced by Sam Corey and Nick Austin. Our technical director and engineer is Nate Bender. Our assistant producer is Maddie Boyer. Editing and mixing is by Connor Anderson. Our music is by Sam Bobian and Will Sessions. Our podcast manager is David Lyons, and our program director is Adam Fox. Detroit Today is a production of WDET Public Radio. If you love the conversations we have on Detroit Today, consider donating to WDET, the public radio station in Detroit that we call home. If you want to be a part of the conversation and call in, you can listen live every day on WDET.org or on the WDET mobile app. Or if you live in Southeast Michigan and still love listening to good old-fashioned radio, like me, tune in to 101.9 FM.